get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride to work, you can ride to the mall. Just keep the sky up above and the ground underneath. Get some wind in your hair and some bugs in your teeth. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam.
It's a minute after 10. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services since 1981. Offering comprehensive automotive service for your 93 and newer vehicle with environmentally conscious practices, Tom Dwyer offers ethanol-powered shuttle service by appointment, one block south of the east end of the Selwood Bridge, 503-230-2300 or tomdwyer.com. And by the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media, and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991. Or theportlandalliance.org. Stay tuned as Kathleen Stevenson and Martha Odom conduct an hour of interviews connected to the upcoming G8 conference in Germany. We are actually waiting for our first guest in Germany to hit his location, so we will be back with you in a couple of moments. Stay tuned for an hour presentation regarding the G8 in an hour. On Democracy Now!, you can hear Murray Wass, veteran investigative reporter with the National Journal and author of the new book, The United States versus I. Lewis Libby. Antonia Yuhas will also be on. Angela Davis at noon on Alternative Radio.
I'm so- And this is Kathleen Stevenson for KBOO, along with
Martha Odom.
And as Andrew mentioned, we're going to be talking about the G8 meeting and the protests associated with it throughout this hour. And right now we have on the line Neil Watkins. He is in Germany at the site of the G8 meeting. Thanks for being with us, Neil.
Thanks for having me.
Neil is the national coordinator of Jubilee USA Network. Jubilee USA is an alliance of groups working for debt relief for countries in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Neil, how long have you been at the meeting, and are you in Heiligendamm or Rostock?
Well, I'm right now in Rostock, Germany, which is the site of a lot of the alternative events, and I have been in and around Rostock since the 1st of June.
Wow. And I'm assuming that you have not gone inside the official meetings.
No, there's not not a whole lot of access to the G8 summit itself. As you can imagine, there's about a 10-mile fence circling the summit site. So they haven't invited civil society over for consultations.
So what have you been doing?
Well, first of all, when earlier in the week on Sunday, or Saturday rather, there was a large demonstration with organizers estimate between about 60 to 80,000 people really calling on the G8 to keep their promises on poverty in Africa and to address climate change. And a number of other issues were raised. So that was a large event and a strong call to the G8 for change. And since then, we've been participating in alternative summits and trying to reach out to the media to get the message out about what the G8 needs to be doing to work towards a more just world.
And that's what I wanted to talk with you about. What areas or issues do you think the G8 will be talking about that you have an interest in and that you would like to have input on?
Well, there's a couple of major areas. One is the question of Africa, and the G8 have been talking about Africa significantly for their past 4 or 5 summits now. But we're really saying that we need to move beyond just talk and rhetoric to serious action. 2 years ago in the United Kingdom, at Glen Eagles, the G8 agreed to increase aid and cancel debt. And now we're seeing 2 years later that some of those promises are not being kept, that the aid levels have not increased as promised. On debt cancellation, which is the issue we focus on, we've seen some cancellation, which has worked, but we haven't seen cancellation for enough countries, and we're seeing threats to that cancellation from creditors called vulture funds. So we're here trying to basically demand that the G8 keep their promises, and we think they should do much more for Africa because there's such an urgent crisis of poverty and injustice. And I think the other major issue here that most campaigners are watching and the world is watching is on climate change and the question of whether President Bush and the United States will join the global consensus around the need to really cut emissions in order to stop devastating climate change.
Well, maybe we could talk a little bit more about the debt relief initiative. You mentioned there has been some progress. Do you want to talk at all about what there has been, what has happened since that was created that is positive? And then
sure.
Thanks.
Yeah, debt relief really was forced onto the agenda of the G8 back in 1999 when there was a huge 70,000-person human chain in the United Kingdom when Tony Blair was hosting the summit at that time. And, of course, campaigners from across Asia and Africa and Latin America have long been demanding debt justice. The G8 did very limited debt relief in 1999. And then in 2005, just 2 years ago, committed to do more. And what they committed to was to provide 100% debt cancellation to the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank, and our government to about 22 countries. And while they have done that for those countries, what we're finding now is that in those countries, actually we're seeing really positive impacts on the ground. So, for example, in Zambia, we've seen that people who used to have to pay to get access to health care are now able to receive that care for free thanks to benefits from debt relief. But in that same country, in Zambia, we're facing really a new challenge and a new threat in that these companies called vulture funds are now suing countries like Zambia for large amounts of money, and they're taking advantage of some of the benefits of debt relief. And in fact, just in the past few months, Zambia has been ordered to pay $15 million to a U.S.-based individual named Michael Sheehan, who runs a firm called Donegal International. And that's about half of what Zambia saved this year in terms of debt relief. So we're calling on the G8 to stop this practice. They have the power to do it. But we understand the U.S. government hasn't been taking proactive action and even been blocking proposals to deal with this problem coming from the United Kingdom and Germany.
Okay, so it sounds like this whole issue is not country specific as far as success. It sounds like success is mixed with challenges within each of the countries that need this kind of help.
Yeah, that's right. Some of the countries that have received cancellation are facing these challenges, such as vulture funds. But we think there are dozens of further countries that shouldn't be excluded. For example, Kenya has a tremendous crisis of poverty, large population living with HIV and AIDS, but it has not had access to debt cancellation, basically for arbitrary economic criteria. So we think that the G8 should be expanding debt cancellation to all the countries that need it to meet the Millennium Development Goals, and we think they ought to look at debts that were basically contracted by unaccountable regimes, by dictators, by Mobutu Sese Seko, as an example, in the former Zaire. But the people of the former Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo, are still paying today, desperately poor country, are paying for debts that Mobutu took out. It's an example of what we call an odious debt. So we think that the G8, they did something, but now they think they've done it all, and we think that they have more to do on this issue, and that it is an effective tool to really fight poverty. We've seen it works, and we think it should be expanded.
And can you explain any more the issue that you mentioned where there were attempts to deal with this issue by Britain and a rebuff of that by the United States?
Yes. Well, what we've learned is that about a month ago, in response to pressure from campaigners in Africa and Europe and our organization and others, that the G8 finance ministers, this is the group of people that include our Treasury Secretary, they met about 3 weeks before the G8 summit on May 22nd, and they talked about vulture funds. And what we understand is that Gordon Brown, who's the United Kingdom's chancellor and will soon be the prime minister, brought a very specific proposal for things the G8 could do to stop these vulture funds. And we now know that the U.S. basically said, we're not supporting these proposals because we think that it might undermine the credibility of private financial markets. And not a valid argument. I think it's really a sort of a response, which is unfortunate, because the Bush administration, to its credit, actually took a pretty strong lead in negotiating the debt cancellation deal in 2005. And these vulture funds are basically taking advantage of our taxpayers' money, of U.S. taxpayers' money, who helped subsidize that deal. So we think it's actually in the Bush administration's interest to try to address this problem. But so far, we haven't gotten a positive response. So we're going to be really increasing the pressure on the administration.
And can you talk a little bit more about the tax issue related to people in the United States and what exactly that means? What are you talking about when you say U.S. taxpayers are bearing the burden?
Well, the debt relief initiatives that were agreed in 2005 were agreed to be financed in a particular way, which is that the United States would give more money to the World Bank's development arm, the International Development Association, in exchange for agreeing to provide debt cancellation. So taxpayers are actually appropriating money to the World Bank for debt cancellation. But now we're seeing some of those funds being really paid off from Zambia to these vulture fund creditors instead.
Okay, so U.S. taxpayers, or the U.S. is not receiving what it's due? Is that?
No, it's more a question of the Zambian government being told that it needs to, because of this ruling in the United Kingdom where the Vulture Fund was told it is due $15 million from Zambia, Zambia is having to pay the Vulture Fund with the debt cancellation resources it got from the United States.
Okay. Let me tell people again, I'm speaking with Neil Watkins live from Rostock, Germany, at the site of the G8. He is the national coordinator of Jubilee USA Network. And I thank you again for being with us. Neil, can I ask you about what you mentioned pressure on, we want to keep the pressure on U.S. leaders in this meeting. What are you exactly doing for that?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. First, on the questions of debt, we've been mobilizing online campaign asking President Bush to take leadership to address the challenge of vulture funds. We're also seeing that the U.S. Congress and some of our allies in the U.S. Congress are taking strong measures on the debt question. So, for example, about 3 weeks ago in the House Subcommittee on Africa, there was a hearing on the vulture fund issue. And since then, a number of leaders in Congress have sent a letter to President Bush saying that they wanted attention to this issue. And also later this week, in response to really what is G8 in action on implementing the promises on debt made in 2005 and an inability to really take the next steps, there's going to be a new bill introduced in the House of Representatives called the Jubilee Act for expanded debt cancellation, which will really put forward a strong vision from Congress saying that more must be done if we're to meet the Millennium Development Goals, if we're to really address the scourge of global poverty, which still, unfortunately, is only getting worse every day. So I think there are definitely growing forms of pressure on the Bush administration to do more, and we'll see if they react.
And at the meeting there, do you have specific actions planned around this issue?
Yes, there are. Well, first of all, the march, which launched the week on Saturday, June 2nd, was really a powerful message. There were mostly peaceful protesters. Most of the themes were focused on issues such as need for greater debt cancellation, for increased aid, for trade justice, for addressing climate change. Unfortunately, those protests were a bit marred by the actions of a few. There were some clashes with police, and really not a positive ending to that at all. And I think the media tended to cover, you know, the more sensational pictures of that rather than, you know, the really large numbers of people that were out marching peacefully and calling on the G8 to really do much more. And I think throughout the week, there are a number of, there's a large alternative summit being held here all across the city of Rostock. And you see people from across Europe, from across Africa, from the U.S., from elsewhere, really demanding another world and saying that, you know, the current model that the G8 is promoting is not one that is, that is moving us away from crisis, and that we need really a new approach. So it's inspiring to be here with so many people from across the globe who are putting that message out, and we can only hope that it will reach the G8 behind their 10-mile fence there.
I read an article published in The Guardian yesterday by George Monbiot. And he said that the title of the article is G8, Watch What They Do, Not What They Say, and he pretty much talks about hypocrisy, about what will be being said about helping nations at the conference as opposed to what will really be done. Can you comment on that and how you think that works and how your kind of work goes along with that?
Yeah, well, there's, you know, I mean, the leaders of these eight nations are very good at sort of promoting their initiatives and talking in language that sounds very good. For example, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced a few weeks ago that Germany was going to increase its aid by $3 billion. And that was her big announcement for the summit. But Oxfam and others have found that actually that is half of the amount of aid that Germany had already committed to increase. So she's, you know, making this announcement, which sounds really dramatic, really exciting, but it's actually less than the promise she had already, or the previous German chancellor had already made. And then similarly, President Bush made a big announcement last week in Washington about increasing support for HIV and AIDS through his president's plan for AIDS relief. Good, of course, to spend more money on AIDS, but if you look at how fast AIDS is growing, the president's proposal for additional funds won't even keep up with the demand of people that will need to be treated in the coming years. So, you know, this year, the focus is very much on aid and on climate change. And even if you look at, you know, the questions of these aid commitments, they sound like big numbers, but you really have to look behind the, you know, like probably George Monbiot is saying, you have to look beyond the headlines and scrutinize these claims a bit, because they're not as generous as they seem.
And what do you think is the future? He seems to be saying, there's really no purpose to this. What do you think about the future of these G8 meetings and this G8 group?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a really strange self-appointed, system of government where you have eight leaders, not even the eight largest economies anymore, but just sort of by tradition, these eight countries come together once a year, and there are literally millions and millions of dollars spent on these summits. I mean, you have elaborate security, you have 2,000 staff whose job it is in these governments collectively every year just to work on the G8 summit. A tremendous amount of money and resources put into these summits. And you have to wonder if we didn't invest more in existing, bodies which are more representative, more democratic, such as the United Nations. In terms of aid, the AIDS issue, there's a very positive institution called the Global Fund to fight HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria. And instead of promoting lots of country-specific, U.S.-led initiatives, it seems to be that it would make more sense to work in these multilateral fora, which are more democratic and more representative. So I'm not sure how long the G8 will last. They have an awful lot of money and, military might behind them, so I'm not sure they're going to go away anytime soon. But I think, especially as countries like China and India continue to grow, and Brazil and Mexico and these other countries, I think it's going to be very hard for the G8 to continue to meet in isolation and sort of ignore the agenda of the majority of the world.
Now, I just wanted to ask you at the end here of this interview if there's anything that we haven't touched on that you think is important, or anything that you think people should really be aware of or you should emphasize at this point about what's going on there.
Well, I think that people should just really watch what happens at the end of the summit. The president will conclude the summit on Friday, June 8th, and expect, some flashy headlines. But a couple things to watch for. One, does the U.S. join the rest of the world in agreeing to fight climate change in a serious way by agreeing to reduce emissions? So far, President Bush has not supported that. Will the U.S. join, the Kyoto Protocol and its successor? And then a second question is to really look at what they say about Africa coming out of this G8 summit, and do they not only increase, do they do more than they've done before? Right now, the best campaigners are hoping is that they simply reaffirm promises made 2 years ago, but we think we need a really strong deal for increased and more effective aid that doesn't come with harmful conditions, as well as debt cancellation. It's right now looking unlikely that will happen. But I think it'll be important for people to watch and listen carefully to the news comes out later this week.
Great. I want to thank you so much for being with us and talking about these issues. And thank you, Neil Watkins from Rostock.
Thank you, Neil. Stay safe.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And that was Neil Watkins. He is the National Coordinator of Jubilee USA Network. And we'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back. This is Martha Odom, or KBOO Radio's feature on the start of the G8 Conference Summit. Wanted to give a little background because I was personally unclear, G5, G6, G8 plus 5, so I ran through and found what I hope is a sort of coherent flow so we know what we're talking about. After 1973 oil crisis and the global recession, the U.S. created what was called the Library Group, and it was a gathering of the U.S., Britain, West Germany, and Japan to address economic issues. Then in 75, France and Italy were added and became the G6. Canada was included the next year. Russia was formally joined in the group in 1997, and it became the Group of Eight, or the G8. It's an informal forum. It doesn't have administrative structure. The presidency rotates annually among the members, and each year's president organizes and hosts both the summit and the series of ministerial meetings that lead up to it. A lot of the work is done in the ministerial meetings, and it targets issues of mutual or global concern, health, law enforcement, energy, social development, the environment, foreign affairs, justice, terrorism, and trade. The European Commission has representatives attend all the meetings. Meetings that are labeled G7 exclude Russia, and G8 plus 5 includes representatives from China, Mexico, India, Brazil, and South Africa. The G8 plus 5 was created at Glen Eagle, Scotland in 2005, and this is primarily to reach agreement on a post-2012 climate change settlement. In 1994, the G7 created the Global Information Society, and this is international databases that keep track of pedophiles and pool data on terrorism. Violence has marked previous G8 summits, notably Italy in 2001 when one protester was killed. The summit beginning today is the 33rd. It's in Heiligendamm, Germany. It is a remote seaside resort, exclusive. It's the oldest, most elegant in Germany. It was begun in 1793. It's also known as the White Town by the Sea because of its white classist buildings. It was a popular playground for German Kaisers, the nobility, and high society. The Kempinski Grand Hotel, where the summit is being held, was opened in 2003. The summit is quite probably the greatest show of domestic security / repression that has ever happened. As of 7 a.m. this morning, local time, the area around Heiligendamm was officially closed to public access. There's a $17 million steel, concrete, and razor wire fence that runs 7-plus miles, 8 feet high, surrounding the entire town. And outside of the town is, I've heard, various 2 to 3 mile security zone where protest is prohibited. The coast is patrolled by warships, and all other boats are banned. 20 accredited journalists have been banned from the area, and journalists who have been admitted are facing severe limitations on where they can be. Prior to the actual summit, police action includes collecting odor samples so that police dogs can trace down selected protesters. Police with subpoenas have been opening mail and currently are threatening to confiscate driver's license and other ID from protesters who are deemed problem people. 1 month ago, 900 federal, state, and local police raided 40 locations, including offices, apartments, and a bookstore of potential protesters, and the current regulation says that anyone who is a potential troublemaker can be taken into custody for 14 days of preventative custody. The estimates are that there are 16,000 police, 1,000 plus army, patrol ships, and helicopter convoys in the area. So to give us an update on what's happening on the ground, we are being joined by Doug White. Okay, we will be joined soon by Doug White. He is in the media office, the G8 Press Group, located in the area. We're hoping to get reports on what's going on today as the summit actually opens. We are hearing wire reports of police brutality, protesters throwing rocks. The gates have 10,000 people present and another 10,000 blocking the roads between Rostock and Heiligendamm. One estimate puts between 60 and 80,000 protesters in the area. Security zone outside of the fence, I was looking at video earlier, is clearly full of thousands of people. So we will, let's see what we can talk about before. We'll back up to June 2nd. That was Saturday. The protests in Rostock, thousands of people were demonstrating against the G8. The original information coming out of the protest was that demonstrators had provoked police. There's a subsequent video that shows protesters were basically doing nothing, and the police grabbed a few people and dragged them away. And at that point, it escalated into violence. There is reports of hundreds of police in... Okay, so we have the media office on the line.
Yes, hello, how are you?
Hello, this is Jason.
Yes, I was on your show a few
months
ago. Yes,
good to talk to you, Jason. Welcome, thank you for being with us. Give us, please, a picture of what's going on there today.
Well, today, it's your morning, but it's our end of the day, and it was a really big success for us. The government and activists have gone back and forth with this very interesting battle that is quite specific to Germany. You don't see this in the States, where people have to register demonstrations with the government in order to have them, and then the government can actually deny them if they say that they are too dangerous or what have you, even though in Germany they have a right to legally assemble and protest as we do in the States. So it's been interesting that in the past months people have registered these legal demonstrations to say we want to march to this exclusive red zone, this $13 million fence they've built around the G8 summit, and the government has denied the right to march or really to protest around the airport as Bush flew in. There were thousands of protesters trying to go and protest, and massive police repression and intimidation and checks kept a lot of them away, but people did that, and then today people took to the streets massively. And actually, there's a media blackout amongst most of the American press about this. But if you're able to look online or you check indymedia.org, click on the German version. You can find a ticker, like a up-to-the-minute reports from Germany here. And you can read that there's about 10,000 people blockading all entrances to the G8 today. And these blockades have been up and going from 9 a.m. all the way until now today.
I actually did see media video, I don't remember where, and it looked like the fence, certainly the security area was breached, and that at one point the fence was actually breached. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. The police have built quite a big, costly fence. As I mentioned, it's something like 12 million euros or 16 to 18 million dollars is the cost. It's about 8 or 9 feet high with this razor wire circling on the top. And then a couple of weeks ago, they decided that wasn't enough to protect the G8 leaders from from the enemies they've created over the years, and they created a second zone where they put this razor wire or razor ribbon rolled around the ground, also again for something like 10 miles long. And the mainstream media here in Germany has reported that police are totally overwhelmed. So a number of protesters, including families, colorfully painted clowns, samba bands, and whoever, have just swarmed on the fence, the entire area, and the three main entrances where delegates were to be brought in, journalists, food catering, and all the support services, translators, and so on. And the last I heard on a phone call from a colleague, he was at one of these gates, and there were 3,000 people blocking the entrance, and the police were just not able to do anything about it, really. And loads of activists and folks are coming and going, and largely across the fields, because the police are kind of controlling the streets where they make roadblocks themselves, but activists are going across the fields and delivering food and coffee, and a lot of them hope to stay there the night. If that doesn't work, or if the weather gets a bit colder, then folks might come to these three activist camps they've got kind of surrounding the G8 and rest a bit and then go out in the morning and make blockades.
Jason, how is morale and energy? And folks have been there for quite a while now. I've read blogs and sounds like a little bit of sleep deprivation. How are folks holding up?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because the G8 summit in the U.S. in 2004 was quite small. Bush doesn't like critique, so he decided to hold the G8 summit on an island off the coast of Georgia that year. Instead, activists decided to protest against Bush and at the Republican National Convention in August of 2004 in New York. So since the G8 hasn't met any demonstrations really in the U.S. since 1997, people in the U.S. just aren't aware of the G8. But in Germany, they are quite aware of the problems created by the G8 nations and their policies, whether it's climate change or poverty in Africa. And so for these reasons, we've had a whole week of protest every single day for the last week. And there was even a survey released today saying that a majority of German citizens think that there is no sense at all for the G8 summit to occur. So starting a week ago, we had a big demonstration in Hamburg with about 8,000 people. It was quite a militant demonstration with a number of NGOs and nonprofits, but also quite a big angry black bloc who feels, I don't know, in some ways, some could say more passionately or more angry about some of these issues. And there was some small riots in Hamburg that evening. That was about a week ago. And then we've had an occupation of the Air Force testing range or bombing range here at a place called Bombadrome, where the Air Force here in Germany tests their bombs.
Is that the one where folks painted the guard towers pink?
Yes, the Army doesn't seem to like it when they paint them pink and they rush out and paint them olive drab green again the next day. So anti-war people and anti-militarist folks and some bike caravan, they went and they actually camped out in the bombing range to say we're against your militarist policies. And so they did that on the first. On the second, there was a very big march in Rostock here. It's the biggest city in the region of the G8 with upwards of 80,000 people. And the police were quite intimidating. They had quite a few times where they just rushed into crowds and randomly beat people. They intimidated people quite a bit, and some people really fought back. The police had beaten some people, and people responded quite militantly, some people with stones and batons, and you might have seen in the press that one car was burned, one or two cars. This created some controversy, but then the next day, there were protests and demonstrations on the streets about agriculture and global problems with agriculture and genetically modified foods. Then on the 4th, we saw a day of demonstrations about migration, calling for an end to borders and Germany's racist migration policies, which have a lot of opposition here in Germany. And then yesterday, people went and protested Bush's arrival and made some blockades to stop delegates from making it to the G8. And then today was the first big day of blockades. Tomorrow, we will see more demonstrations immediately around the G8. There's a big march planned in the morning. And then tomorrow and the next day, we may see demonstrations in other large cities such as Berlin and Hamburg as well.
Jason, there is a story of a potential Nazi demonstration scheduled for tomorrow. Do you know about that?
Yes, this is another sad story of this region of Germany. Anytime you have 18% unemployment, these racists and neo-Nazis are kind of actively whipping up racist fervor and nationalist fervor. So sadly, the neo-Nazi party, the NPD, or National Democratic Party, has been gaining some votes and actually got into the regional parliament here. They got 7% of the vote last November and got 6 seats in the parliament. They wanted to march in the nearby capital of Schwerin last Saturday, but the police said that they were concerned that they couldn't protect the safety of the neo-Nazis because there were too many anti-fascists that would march. So they banned the demonstration of the neo-Nazis, and the neo-Nazis didn't like this, so they made spontaneous demonstrations in almost 20 cities around Germany, 10 or 20 cities, with as many as 20 people, but they actually had about 120 people marching last week through the Brandenburg Gate, the famous Brandenburg Gate in Berlin. It's where Hitler and the Nazis kind of marched through, and it has this big symbolism in Germany. So Germans don't like it when Nazis are marching through the Brandenburg Gate. But they did that last Saturday, and I think a lot of Germans were shocked and repulsed by this, as were, you know, anyone who's not very happy with Nazis. So the neo-Nazis want to gain attention. They filed for a march tomorrow, a permit to have a march tomorrow. They said they would hope to get 100 people there, but the police said again that they didn't think that they could protect the safety of the neo-Nazis because it's much bigger numbers of anti-Nazis, anti-nationalists, anti-racists around here. So the police said they can't protect their safety, and the police banned that assembly for tomorrow.
So this is Martha Odom. We are talking live to the G8 Summit protesters. This is Jason in Germany. Mm-hmm. Of our special one-hour feature on the G8 Summit. Jason, one of the great videos from yesterday and today is the clowns. And I love the image of 30 clowns facing off with 30 cops along the fence. Who are these clowns?
It's a group that kind of started in England in 2004 or 2005. They called themselves the Clandestine Insurgent Rebel Clown Army, or CIRCA. And they had this idea that by lightening up the atmosphere and maybe doing something that police didn't expect or don't know how to react to, that they could actually take things a bit further. And in London, they started by occupying army recruiting stations, and police would come and not know how to deal with a bunch of clowns, so they would actually be able to successfully occupy an army recruiting station for a while. And then at the G8 summit in 2005 in Gleneagles, Scotland, they used their street theater tactics to actually just march directly through police lines or around them, because the police are used to these confrontational black bloc or more militant type of attacks where they can easily just wade in with clubs and beat people, and they kind of get away with it without the public caring so much. But if you're a fully armored cop with 20 pounds of riot gear on and you're on TV beating a bunch of clowns, it kind of makes you look bad. So the police have largely had to restrain from that. Their normal tactic, which they've used here over the last week, of kind of randomly pushing and beating people or pepper spraying them in the face. So they've had to be a bit more sensitive to the clown army, especially when there are video cameras around. Although another great scene we saw on TV and on indymedia.org yesterday was when some clowns had a water pistol and the police confiscated their water pistol, saying it was a dangerous weapon. And the media just swarmed over the police holding this confiscated water pistol, and it made them look really quite silly again. So this is a nice bit of street theater when the rebel clown army gets in the press. And for your listeners that might have a pen nearby, I can give them some more German websites where they might not be able to read the text, but there's lots of video and lots of photos online. So you can see a lot by going to indymedia, IndyMedia. .org, and then you click on the German one, or on the American site, you can get links to the German one with some English and photos.
And the German site you can get in English also.
Yes, there's most of it in English. And there you can find links to a very good project here called No G8 TV. And then you can download their 10-minute clips that are uploaded every day. There was a very good demonstration done 2 days ago by some Japanese folks, because the G8 will be meeting in Hokkaido, Japan next year. So some people here found out where the Japanese delegation was staying, and they went inside the 5-star hotel, the Hotel Neptune, and they had anti-G8 banners, and they read some speeches in Japanese that were translated into English and German. And we went around this tourist area and gave out tons of flyers to people, and the Japanese were there with their Japanese banners screaming no G8 with their Japanese style of chanting, and the German tourists were just like, what is this? And we went around saying, here's information in German, and this is on a really good clip. If your listeners want to look at the No G8 TV website, download the video clips from the 4th, then they can see these Japanese people inside the 5-star hotel, and it was really quite funny. So people are being really creative. You mentioned some sleep deprivation. It's happening, but you know, we all try to take care of each other, make sure we get enough water, get enough food, try to keep the protein going, and try and keep the strength up for a full week of protests here.
Jason, give me just a quick picture of the logistics of food and water, shelter, showers, that kind of thing, that, you know, the basic needs of 80,000 people. I'm impressed.
Yes, it was 80,000 protesting Saturday. We have about 10,000 on the streets making blockades actively today, while there are a few more thousand staying in the camps. Maybe they need a rest. Maybe they're getting ready for tomorrow. But this is something that Americans are not so familiar with, the type of infrastructure that is built here in both in Germany and across Europe. In Europe, we have these kind of activist soup kitchens or kitchens that are able to feed 500, 1,000, or 2,000 people, you know, bringing very big burners and pots where they can cook a bowl of soup for 400 people at a time. We have massive kitchens making sandwiches for 1,000 people. We have big vans with mobile kitchens, or people are bringing big pots of soup and thousands of things in thousands of sandwiches in rented vans that look a little bit more clandestine than some older bus with hippie stickers that can go a little bit more incognito, maybe around some police lines, and they run up to the barricade, or not the barricade, the blockade with 3,000 activists, and they dump out 1,000 sandwiches quickly and bottles of water and head off, or maybe bring some coffee to keep the caffeine levels going. And the infrastructure is amazing. There are 3,000 camps, which were each set up for about 5,000 activists. One, it was reported, is operating with 9,000. So it's on a harbor, and they spread out into an empty ground nearby. We're operating at our convergence center here, our information center, in an old East German schoolhouse that has 48 rooms. And it was prepared to be it was abandoned the last 3 months, and it was going to be destroyed in September. But public pressure on the mayor of Rostock forced him to donate this use of the school to a number of NGOs and activists who have been using it for the last 3 months to prepare for the summit. It's just amazing the amount of public pressure here and public mobilization that supports this resistance against the G8.
Jason, how are the locals responding to this invasion and disruption of their normal lives?
Mm-hmm. That's another good question. I must say, honestly, that they were quite worried, and that's largely because of the government and police propaganda saying, you never know, these chaotic rioters will be coming, just like we saw in 2001 in Genoa, Italy. They always try to whip up this fear, and because they have €100 million at their disposal, it's like $125 million, they have this at their disposal for negative PR for us and good PR for them. They have police going door to door to encourage people in some cases to board up their windows. So it's also, in a way, the police being used as a political tool, which is another thing that people are quite sensitive about in Germany since the special history of the Second World War. And so we try to make this critique that what the police are doing is a political function of the government. It's not actually protecting against crime, but they are actually a PR firm in many ways for the G8. So it's a bit of a push on the government side and the police side to whip up the fear, which allows them to pass special laws, kind of like we have in the U.S. with the Patriot Act, which allows them to phone tap. It allows them to not let people to assemble within miles and miles of the G8. It allows them, they tried 2 weeks ago, to ban any group of three people or more from meeting within 20 miles of the G8. This went to a higher court in Germany, where activists said that this is unconstitutional. It violates their freedom of assembly. Luckily, activists won in this court case, and it's a continual battle. The police and the government have tried at every step to take away rights, to allow people. People are not allowed to wear plastic protective gear, such as bicycle helmets, because the police last week broke people's arms, hit people over the head, and left them lying semi-conscious on the ground for 10 minutes without getting medical care. And so, understandably, people want to protect themselves and want to wear plastic helmets or pads on their arms even. And the police got through special laws so that people cannot even use defensive clothing, which is really quite amazing and quite shocking. So it's just a continual battle, both in the public sphere, in the media, in the courthouses, and today we see on the streets, and today we won on the streets.
It does seem, though, that this is a major warning signal that it takes a massive armed force to defend the government from the people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's funny, this question of violence, you know, the government and the media try to continually say, oh, well, be careful, there's violent protesters, but the G8 is so wildly unpopular that there have been massive protests against the G8 since at least 1985, and in this time, there has never been someone seriously injured or killed except by the police when they've killed activists, as we saw in 2001. And also, if you look at the policies of the G8 relating to Africa, we have 30 million people starving to death every year. So this is, you know, massive amount of structural violence. And the public just kind of takes this, you know. It's 30 million people dying a year of avoidable death through starvation. People die from unclean water. People are dying of HIV and AIDS if the U.S. and other countries would allow these nations to get rid of patents, then, you know, they could save these people who are dying all the time. But the government is able to manipulate the public through the media to say, oh, well, we are concerned that activists might hurt someone, but we're so brainwashed that we forget that, you know, 30 million people die every year of starvation and more, and this is acceptable. So it's really kind of disgusting the way that people have been so numbed or dumbed down from the American press that we really need to start looking critically and saying, okay, what is violence and how is it that the government's able to get away with so much, basically mass murder is what it really accounts to.
So, Jason, I so appreciate all your information and you joining us. We have a couple minutes left. Are there some final words you'd like to send out to the greater Cascadia listening audience?
Sure. I know from having friends in Portland, I'm myself from Northern California and have spent a fair amount of time in Portland in the last years. I would encourage people to really phone up your mainstream media or become your media. KBOO is a good example of people really taking media into their own hands. Your listeners should really try to contribute a bit more to KBOO. I know you always have a funding crisis there. If people are watching mainstream media, then they should really put pressure on them to give coverage to main issues like this. I mean, today there's this survey that a majority of German people say that the G8 has no reason to exist. And in the USA, a majority of people have no idea what the G8 is. So I encourage people just to you know, continue to educate themselves, put public pressure on, however you find that that most effective, whether it's taking to the streets or using direct action, doing things to take power and take control of your lives into your own hands. Don't leave these decisions up to the government and just keep the pressure on continually. The G8 is a problem, and it's a problem for us in the rich nations, but it's a much bigger problem for the people that don't even have a voice through the G8 nation. So I encourage people to just remember that and try to do a little bit of something every day to keep the pressure on.
Great. Thank you again. We send greetings, best wishes to all the folks there, especially the folks who are from the Northwest. We have quite a few there. Y'all stay safe and have a great time and do important work. We've been joined by Jason. Oh, Jason, I'm sorry. I don't remember your last name. Mm-hmm. The press, the G8 press office media center in Germany at the 33rd G8 summit. Jason, be well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ciao. Bye.
Bye. For folks who want more anti-G8 stuff, Students for Unity at Portland State today have an anti-G8 film fest. This is in Smith, room 238. It runs from 2:30 to 4:30. Students for Unity is a very dynamic group. Final words. The U.S. early this morning, pretty much, James Conant said the U.S. is not going to adopt any climate change proposals coming out of the G8 summit. We will only do it if it's everybody in the world all together, and everybody has to agree to a collectively stated goal. The U.S. won't agree to any hard targets. We'll only accept voluntary goals, and each nation gets to decide what goals it's going to meet. So climate change is pretty much off the table even before it starts. We thank you for joining us. We hope you've got some good information. We talked to wonderful people who are doing absolutely amazing things. The G8 runs through Friday. And stay tuned, because it sounds like there's way more stuff to come. KB Radio, stay tuned for all the good stuff. Have a great day, y'all.
You're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, that is. The time is 11 o'clock. It's time for Democracy Now! Now.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1212.